to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jack Swindlehurst. We're back after a bit of a long break, football-wise. Of course, Graham Daniels and Sean Grady were with us last time. But on this show, we're going to look back at Macclesfield, Grimsby, Guiseley, Oldham and Bury. And then look forward to Crewe, Tranmere and Yeovil. Joining me in the studio is Julian Roberts.
Hello, mate. It's lovely to be back.
Yeah, welcome back. Tom Walker.
Hello, mate.
And our very esteemed colleague and Cambridge United fan, Jordan Warland.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be here.
You've really managed to weedle your way in here, haven't you? Mm.
This is my hat trick of appearances.
I think last time was a hat trick.
No, I think today's the hat trick, and I feel as proud as Adi Aziz when he got his hat trick against Southampton youth team.
Are you the record holder now on UTAS?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think they just snuck ahead of Ramsey.
He's a bit more than a guest now, isn't he, old Jordan? He's part of the furniture. Pull that face, Jack.
Yeah. Can't get rid of him. And also, we're going to look at Fans Parliament and, of course, football Jenga, which I'm very worried about today. It's getting to that point when someone says to you, think of a football match, and that's all you're given.
Yeah.
Pressure of that
it's
is
hard work.
A lot.
Max Rushton absolutely loved that game.
It's a good job I did prepare five, because I think we did four of them. He really did love it, but no, that was a good laugh. And it's been a good laugh watching Cambridge over the past a few months, hasn't it? So, let's go back first and just touch quickly on Macclesfield and Grimsby. That was in a very good run for Cambridge.
Yeah, well, it was 10 from 12, wasn't it? That included, if I'm not mistaken, there was a point at Lincoln, three at Swindon, and then those two crucial home games. And before those, I think we might have spoken about it quite briefly, even all the way back on that very brief footballing show we did before Rushton, how important those two games were going to be. The way the season was shaping up, it was clear that there was going to be the three of it. They were going to be, let's be honest, six pointers. First of all, they were awful games to watch.
Horrible.
Remembering back. Two late winners. Can't really argue with it.
Two clean sheets. Or three, if you include Swindon. I think Swindon was probably the better result, because I don't think any of us were predicting a win at Swindon or a point at Lincoln. We were predicting like 5-6-0 away to Lincoln, so...
Yeah, I lost a lot of money to Bet365 that day on a lot of handicaps, which is quite frustrating, really, but, you know...
Every cloud. And, yeah, it was very important for Cambridge. Like, we were talking about yesterday that 10 points from 12 is huge. You said, what did you say, Tom, like a fifth of... the total needed.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, obviously 10 points is a pretty significant chunk out of what we're probably going to end up with this season. So, and if you look at the table now, where would we be if we hadn't got one of those late winners or if we'd not hold on for the point at Lincoln? You know, we'd be in a pretty dire situation. So, really important. Shame that we perhaps didn't build on it in the manner that we might have liked. But, yeah, the results over that period were kind of very good.
I think that's the crucial point, isn't it, that it didn't take us out of a relegation battle, but had we not have performed and picked up points over that period and then gone on a similar run to kind of what we're seeing now, we'd be
in the same place as Macclesfield, pretty much. Like,
yeah, and they are dire.
They're terrible.
They're really bad.
Sol Campbell's going to turn it round, though.
Is he going to Macclesfield?
That's the rumour this week, that he is going to get his first management job. And what a first management job it is, a team bottom of the 92, 10 points adrift from safety?
Possibly the worst
team. Good
luck
there, Sol. I think like the big sort of headlines from the Macclesfield-Grimsby games were that for the first time this season we've seen us grind out results, which we probably haven't seen elsewhere so far this year. And I think the heartening thing as well is that we were able to sort of... do that back-to-back against teams where we desperately needed a result, and we'll talk about it later in the show, but looking into December, we've got, I think, Yeovil and Crawley back-to-back, and I think that's another instance where we've got two... Yeah, and right, and Morecambe as well. That's another instance where we've got two free games in quick succession where we really need to come out unscathed and with points on the board.
It kind of puts us a little bit... Well, I thought... Yeah, just such crucial points, just separating us maybe a tiny bit. I mean, I'm looking at the table now, and I know this point kind of doesn't seem that valid, considering we are 4 points away.
We're on track for the top seven, though, right?
Are we?
That's a stretch, I feel.
I don't think the mid-table, you know, the kind of usual place Cambridge have been, you know, just off the playoffs... sitting in about 10th, they're not even going to get that far.
There was a really funny point during the Oldham game So I didn't go to the Oldham game. I imagine if you were at the Oldham game, there was no point that was funny. unless you're an Oldham fan and you're watching an old goalkeeper for the opposite team running around the pitch with the ball. But there was a really funny point following the game via the radio and via Twitter where someone tweeted when we were 1-0 up against Oldham that we are now closer points-wise to the playoffs than the bottom two. And then about half an hour later, I got to reply to that person saying this tweet hasn't aged very well at all.
But I think that says a lot about League Two. And I saw this thing that Newport are sitting in fifth with a goal difference of -3. And Bristol Rovers are in League One relegation zone with a goal difference of -3 as well. A few places away from each other when you look at the pyramid on the grand scheme of things. But I guess let's talk about that Oldham game. That was...
Do we have to? I guess we should.
Well, let's start with a positive note anyway, because there was one positive note from that game for Cambridge United, and it was the goal.
Absolutely.
What a goal.
Great goal. Mm. Great goal from a player who's not playing very well.
I don't think he's had a particularly good season, full stop. Same with Brad Halliday, players who were performed so well, especially towards the end of last season. I just don't think they've put that level of performances in the season. But what a strike, and an absolute sitter that could have put us 2-0 up.
Yeah, it was Oldham was really, really frustrating. Quite similar to how Bury may have felt after Saturday's game, to be fair, because you're watching in the first half and it was only 1-0 and we missed a couple of chances and kind of put a couple wide and things like that. And you sort of thought it was there for the taking. I don't think, in terms of some of the losses that we've had this season, it was up there with the worst performances. Like, even at 1-1, a pretty poor goal to concede from a set piece. Obviously, the worst was yet to come, to be fair, in that regard. But even at 1-1, you still thought, OK, we're in this. We can still take something from the game. And it just seemed to sum up our season, to be honest. Like, you sort of put in a reasonable performance, kind of 6 out of 10 or something like that. Mm. And between both boxes, you're probably not quite clinical enough at one end and you're a bit too loose, I think, at the other end. And then it's individual mistakes. And when it's a goalkeeper, they're so highlighted. And, I mean, the second and third goal, the second goal in particular, was just...
It's just a comedy of errors, wasn't it, like from the start? And the best bit about it is not only does he come out of his box to pick the ball up, it's then the pass he tries to play is with the outside of his foot. Like, he thinks he's like Andres Iniesta or something, spraying a ball.
It's frustrating, because like when I was there yesterday watching him, like, I'm a little bit overweight. Like, you know, I've got a bit of a gut. And, you know, I pay to play on a Sunday, right? I'm running around that pitch and I've got a really good touch. And then I'm seeing people like him stealing a living. But in all seriousness, people pay to go to football. And then he's not at a level that he should be playing in the Football League anymore, in my mind.
No, he's just...
He did okay yesterday against Bury.
Even then...
Nice, like, one-handed catch from the corner.
The way that he sort of played yesterday was like he didn't play badly. Do you know, it's not like he played well.
No.
And I think that there is kind of, I guess, a thing with David Ford now where everything's going to be seen in the context of what he's done, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like yesterday, I think it was the first goal we conceded. I wouldn't say it was necessarily down to him at all, to be honest. But as soon as it goes in the back of the net, like, everyone's at him and on his back. And it might be harsh taken in isolation, but you look at the last few games, like, Oldham, it's a ridiculous error, and it's not the first time he's done it. I remember Forest Green away, he got the ball nicked off him and they scored from that. Last season, I remember it being lobbed from about 70 yards at Luton. Like, there are errors that have been in his game, and since probably Christmas time last year, the form's just dropped, like, so dramatically, where, to be fair, like, the first probably 3 or 4 months when he signed for us, he's probably, arguably, probably the best goalkeeper in the league.
Mm-hmm.
It's dropped off so dramatically, and I think there is a thing with goalkeepers in general that when they do get a bit old and potentially lose it a little bit, it does tend to drop off a lot quicker than, say, a striker or a midfielder. And again, with goalkeepers, it's so notable when they are making mistakes and they're not playing well, because they do usually lead to goals. And the third goal as well at Oldham, it's not just the second one. Like, I don't think the highlights do it justice. Like, it was straight at him. Shot, and it's a well-hit shot, like, don't get me wrong, and the striker's done well to kind of get in that position and kind of get a shot away, but it's right down his throat. And I recognise that again, like it is a well hit shot, but you expect your goalkeeper to at least get a hand on it, and it went through him. Like,
I was going to say, what was worse, the third goal or the second goal? Because the second goal was just kind of, I don't know, you kind of sort of say, oh, that was a moment of madness, and that's not going to happen week in, week out. But whereas the third goal, like you say, he should have done a lot better. It's kind of gone through him. And then you think about other games so far this season, Crawley away, shots seem to have just crept in when they shouldn't have done. Carlisle at home, Carlisle's first goal sort of just looped over him really slowly, should have got. Colchester, there's loads of games like that this season. And I guess the point I wanted to make is there's a rumour going around that he doesn't train full time. I don't know if that's true or not, but he does look like someone who isn't 100% match sharp. Physique-wise, he doesn't look like he's, you know, training 5 days a week.
No, that's a very nice way of putting it.
So maybe, you know, maybe the issue is these kind of sort of softer goals are because he's not, I don't know, as match ready or as match sharp as someone that trains full time. I don't know if he trains full time or not. That's a rumour that's going around. I don't know if anyone else heard that.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter.
That's something that I've heard. Something that I believe from what I've heard and from who I've heard it from. Things like that.
Tom's in the know, isn't he? Look.
Listen to him, look. I wouldn't say that, but you know, it's very much... I know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy, sort of thing. But like,
oh yeah, I know.
You saw someone.
Yeah, I know him too. Yeah. Same guy. You're talking about the same guy.
Yeah, that guy.
I think you know his mate.
There's a more general point that I wanted to make with this, going back to the game in particular, is that I feel like this season, especially, I've come out of games and I'm looking back at games, and we're saying, oh, there's individual errors that cost us there, whether it be David Ford at Oldham, George Taft at Colchester, Mitov. Against Exeter. And there's countless other games like that we come out and you go, maybe as a team we did all right or we did okay, we looked decent enough going forward, but then a few individual errors and the confidence is low anyway. But is there a point where all these individual errors become a bit more than that? You can't just take them in isolation. You kind of maybe have to start taking them as something that's symptomatic of a bigger problem, which I'm not saying it's bad coaching. I'm saying maybe the defence as a whole is being coached badly. Possibly. What do we think? Do you think that's something that you can...
You made a good point yesterday, and it's true throughout the whole team, and obviously the league position shows this. Confidence is like zero in those players.
It's quite sad. Oldham was like the best example of it. Like I said, it seemed to sum up the whole season. Like, as soon as something goes against them, they just fold.
Yeah.
Like,
well, look, apart from yesterday against Bury, that was the first time when we went down to 10 men where they showed guts. Oldham, they didn't show that a week before and it just fell apart. And there's been numerous times this season where it's fallen apart. I get what you're saying about sort of the defensive errors. I guess it's kind of sort of chicken and egg, isn't it? Like, is it the defence's fault or is it the attacker's fault? Because you look at Oldham, and like Tom said earlier, we should have had a second or a third. And if we don't have a clinical finisher, we don't have someone who could put these chances away. First half against Guiseley, we should have scored. Numerous chances throughout the season where if we had scored, it takes the pressure off the defence a bit. I think you're right, there are issues with the defence, but it's kind of...
Well, it goes back to this thing.
Fix first?
We're decent enough, we've said it so many times, and it's Tom's favourite catchphrase this season. We're good between both boxes.
Yeah.
And then we can't put it in their net, and it seems to somehow creep into our net every time. If we're talking about folding and lack of confidence, let's go on to Guiseley. Let's
step sideways into the FA Cup. A trip that was already annoying for the Cambridge fans after, you know, no public transport were able to get there on a Sunday. You know, the club put buses on, well done to them. But then you go, you know, you've taken your whole Sunday to travel 3 hours away or whatever, and then you're presented with that. Yeah. It's embarrassing.
I mean, the team stayed over the night before, didn't they? So that's an additional cost, which is fine because Guiseley away, that's an easy game. That's 50 grand in the bank.
Yeah.
Oh, that didn't work.
No. Yeah. I mean, to be 4-0 down to a team two leagues below you who are 14th.
I was going
to
say, this is the crucial point. If they were challenging in the playoffs in the Conference North, we'd go, they're a form team, we're definitely not. At the end of the day, you're looking at like, you know, 20 places or whatever between us. But they're not even that decent in their own league.
No.
And we folded. I mean, the first goal is a bit of a belter, right? Guiseley's first goal.
That's what you call an FA Cup goal. Like, he won't score another one
again. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then there's...
And the second one was a fluke, that was a cross. That sort of looped in a bit.
We should have been 2-0 up before I think Ibero had two chances before they took the lead.
Yeah, two
correct
one
me
on
if
ones.
I'm wrong.
Yeah,
and you have to score one of those two. Put both away, but you have to put one of them.
It's exactly what Jack was just saying. Like if your strikers aren't putting them in at one end, you're putting massive pressure on the defence to Jordan Rahma.
Yeah,
cheers, mate.
We both agree on that.
Yeah. I told him to say that.
Hard-working midfielders.
I think the problem for me, and I don't know if it's something that people would agree with, and I don't know whether I'm just viewing it again in like the context of what had gone before. But Guiseley for me was the first game this season where, and like I don't mind it if our players aren't of the best quality. Like we all know the situation we're in and the challenges that we're up against. But for me, like effort was just not there against Guiseley.
Yeah,
like,
so true.
I don't know whether it was just complacency thinking. Well, we're professional full-time footballers. Allegedly for some of them
and there was one goal where, there was one of their goals, I can't remember which one it was, I think it was in the second half where Giovanni Brown just gave the ball away and just didn't run back. They were
was this
bust a gut
yesterday?
To help out.
No.
Well, I mean, you
I
could
did
apply
it yesterday
it.
As well.
You
actually.
Can apply it to yesterday and poor old Leon Davis having no support.
I think
him,
he was thrown under the bus there.
Well, this is something we'll go on
yeah,
to. Yeah,
sorry, yeah.
But with Guiseley, I completely agree with you, Tom. I think that's the main thing, like, especially as when you, having been to a lot of away games in my time, the one thing I can forgive a lack of quality or a lack of cutting edge. But you can't forgive a lack of effort, especially the complacency aspect.
Especially when you're going into a game where you know that the team that you're going to be up against, and credit to Guiseley for fulfilling this, is they're just going to give it their all. Like, cliche, but it's their cup final. They're in the first round. They're playing a league team. They're not full-time. They are going to absolutely go hell for leather and chase every ball down and really sort of go for it. And, you know, we should have managed the game in a sense where we sort of contain that for the sort of 70, 75 minutes, and then when they tire by the end, finish the job.
Exactly. Exactly.
And at 2-0 at half time, when I was listening on the radio, I was like, I still think we're going to draw or win this game because they will tire. All we need to do is get an early goal second half. And that sort of first 15, 20 minutes of the second half is possibly the worst of the season so far. Like,
the problem is,
the two goals we conceded in that second half were awful.
The problem is that exact thought you had at halftime is probably what all the players were thinking at halftime as well. And then they just walk out thinking they can cruise to pulling it back. I'm frustrated that doesn't read 4-0 because I think it would have hit home a bit harder for a lot. Because you look back on it and you go, oh, that's unlucky.
Yeah.
I still think how bad it was.
I think, like, as professionals, like, I really hope that's kind of embarrassed them quite a lot.
I hope it has.
Even, like, the fact that they nearly got a draw out of it, like, that really should be, like, I don't know, like, they should be really hurt by it. Like, they should be really, really embarrassed.
In fact, Maris should have actually, he had a huge chance in the last minute. But anyway,
it would have been papering over the cracks if we'd got a replay, you know.
Massively, yeah, exactly.
So I just think it was embarrassing is the word.
Yeah,
and they should be embarrassed.
I'm a little bit older than the rest of you guys on the pod, but I remember watching us lose 2-0 at home to Woking in 96. We were Division 3, I think, at the time, and Woking were either Conference or the one below the Conference. And that was the first... It was a really surreal experience because I was fairly young and sort of seeing your team lose to a team that you just expected to win. It was crazy. But yeah, not since then have we had a cup defeat that embarrassing. I'm not going to include the Histon FA Trophy one.
Yeah, I was going to say that one. Or the one that always sticks in my mind is Wealdstone in the FA Trophy, which is like 2000.
But Histon, we were playing a team who were very much on the up and they had everything going for them, and Cambridge as a club were the complete opposite. We were in a real mess at that point. I think a lot of people expected us to lose that Histon game. Maybe not the 5-1 or 5-0 that it finished, but I don't know. I still think Guiseley the other week was probably more embarrassing than that.
Yeah.
Especially because it was on BBC Sport. Like, there's a lot of people noticing.
People watching it, yeah.
Yeah, well, Cambridge, you know, hopefully maybe the distraction of the cup isn't what they need, but you don't want to go out of any cup, and especially not like that. But they did, and, you know, they've come back. And then some spirit was shown yesterday where we didn't, you know, necessarily think that anything would happen after being 2-0 down and then having a man sent off. No, it was 2-1 at the time, then a man sent off. It looked like Cambridge were going to unfold against Bury.
There's, I think, a few points. The first question I want to ask, and I just have seen so many different things, were we playing a diamond in that first half?
I kind of thought we were originally, but then there were times, and you and I were stood watching the game together, we sort of said, oh, actually, that's a very flat three behind Ibire. I don't know. I didn't think it was a diamond.
If it was a diamond, it was a very, very misshapen one.
Yeah. I'll stand by this. It wasn't a diamond. It was Maris and Deegan sitting, Lewis playing behind Ibire, and then Brown and Lamb on the wings. Yeah. And the only reason I bring this up, because I think it's crucial, is a lot of people have... We had a question as well. Throwing Leon Davis in, right? Mm-hmm. I agree, a bit early. But the criticism that's being made is, why would you then play a diamond so he's got no one covering him in front of him? But I think Brown's job was to cover him, but he just wasn't doing it.
Do you think
we were standing on that side, and the first goal that someone squeezes past Brown, whoever it is, in the build-up to it, and he just stops running after him, and then Davis has got two men on him, and even if that's Greg Taylor or Louis John, you're 2-on-1.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just not getting the cover. He swapped Lamb and Brown, if you clocked, after about half an hour, that made a difference.
The thing is, diamond or 4-2-3-1. Doesn't matter. Joe Dunn got the tactics wrong.
Yeah.
We were playing a team in form and who have probably the best left side in the league. They play wing backs. Any bit of scouting or foresight would have known that. If you play a diamond or if you play two holding midfielders, there is a good chance you're going to be overrun on either flank.
Yeah.
His tactic seems to be to play a diamond or 4-2-3-1 until he gets to a point, fitness wise, where he can introduce Amu and Dunk. It worked yesterday. But I think it was great that he played Leon Davis. I think Leon Davis has been around the first team squad for a couple of years, has probably should have been out on loan more than he has to get sort of game time. It's a very difficult situation for him because he's been behind Brad Halliday and he's not going to get in ahead of him. We're now in a position where we all but know Halliday's gone next in the summer.
Yeah.
You need to now start blooding Leon Davis. Personally, yesterday I wouldn't have chosen that game. I would have gone Taylor right back and Lewis John centre back.
I'd have gone John at right back. John is first and foremost a right back, right? He played right back for Sutton, I think, last year.
Yeah.
And he's been one of the standout players that I've seen this season. I don't know if anyone disagrees with that. I think every time I've seen him played decently enough above my personal expectations. I think it's not the game where you throw Leon Davis in. And you could see them attacking that flank every time. Brown wasn't covering. Davis is left exposed every time. Both
number
goals.
Number 10 was quality as well. What's his name?
Danny Mayer.
He was
good.
Brilliant.
One of the better players in the league. I think last time Berry were in it, and same again this year. But just with Leon Davis, I understand that perhaps if people think it's a bit too early, but again, like if you think that we should be blooding him and getting him ready for next season, then surely the time when your first choice right back is out injured is exactly the time when you want to be doing that. And to be fair, I've seen Leon Davis actually getting quite a bit of stick, and again, Julian mentioned that we had a couple of people kind of tweeting and whatever else saying that he didn't play that well. I thought it was okay, actually.
Second half, he did really well. He had a bit more cover with Lamb.
His delivery into the box was superb on like a number of occasions. And
we should have scored from one of them as well. I think it sort of fell back stick to
Osadabi
and it sort of snatched it.
In that first half, He just looked exposed. Like, it was just he was just overrun is all he was. He just, the tactics didn't work, and I agree. I think you go
I'm
back
not
to
sure
Dan.
How much that was down to necessarily Davies as it was down to just not having any protection. And Gary Deegan helped him out actually quite a bit. Noticed him kind of tucking in and helping out. And that's good leadership from Deegan, to be fair. But it shouldn't really be in that situation, because that then does pull out the rest of the team, and it means that everyone else has to shift over one, essentially, and where that should be the job that the winger is doing, which again, like you've quite rightly said, like Reggie Lamb did a bit better than Giovanni Brown. But just on that tracking back thing, a couple of people I was stood around yesterday said that, and again, like I'm not sure, I don't watch them train, I don't know the messages that they've been told, but apparently the two wingers, the two wide guys, so usually it's going to be Giovanni Brown and Reggie Lamb, they're told to stay up forward. So if it gets to a point when they're being told not to track back and not to get into that defensive third, that's not their fault. They're just doing what they've been told to do.
I think we missed a really crucial point at the start of the show, and that was we did so well first half against Swindon away, playing a more conventional 4-3-3, where you had Brown in the centre as a false nine, Lamb and Amu either side. Okay, we've now got Ibire back, so you've got a more defined striker there, but I don't get why we've not stuck to that formation. Then you have a conventional three across the middle, Deegan, and then you've got loads of options: O'Neill, Maris, Paul Lewis, Osa plus a Deby. If you've got three in the middle, then you've got a bit more sort of protection for your fullbacks.
And there's a bit less reliance on players to come back and cover. But I see what you're saying, Tom. Yeah, that your point is it might not be Brown specifically. He's just being told not to get back.
Yeah.
But then it just strikes me as, I agree we should blood Leon Davison at some stage, but I do just think Louis John's form should have merited his spot. But then again, I completely agree.
Yeah.
He played really well second half.
I don't want to labour the point, but for me, looking at that group of players yesterday, they didn't look organised. But like you say, if you can't look at the pitch at kickoff and basically tell what the formation is, it probably means people don't know where they're meant to be.
Yeah.
And so many times in that game, there were gaps in the middle and then kind of gaps between the midfield and defence, as if someone was not doing their job. Gary Deegan can only run around like a terrier so much and chase the ball, which is a good sign of a player, but it's also a fault because it opens up stuff. But like, it just didn't look like they were organised. I think that's fault. I think Joe Dunn and his management team have dropped the ball massively.
I think the last 30 minutes of the game and the guts that the team showed to get a draw with only 10 men might mask the fact that for the first 60, 70 minutes of that game, we were woeful, especially in defence.
I'd actually argue we were all woeful in defence for 90 minutes, and we got away with it massively.
I mean, at least in the last sort of 20, 30 minutes, there was that throw your body, get in front of the ball.
Taft especially was getting in the way of just about everything.
Whereas in the first half, first 60 minutes, our one-on-one defending and tackling was awful.
They were all over
the amount of chances they were creating from getting past people.
The difference in quality between their attacking and our defending was like leagues apart. And there's, you know, that chance, I was watching it back this morning, the one where he hits the post, second half.
Nicky Maynard, yeah.
Yeah, right. Watch it back, right? George Taft just doesn't, like, he just runs in front of George Taft. And I don't know why he's not put that away. And then Taft, like, gets rid of it. And I think fundamentally, the main thing we take away from it was the spirit. Yep. That was in the team. And I remember saying to you when we were 2-0 down, you were like, oh, maybe we'll get back into this. And maybe it might be me or Jordan was like, nah, no chance of that happening.
Yeah, but the thing is, they scored two quick goals in the first half. And at that point, you're like, this could be 3-4-0 by half time. Mm-hmm. And we got a point yesterday, not because of our spirit and our guts, but because Berry didn't kill off the game. And it's great that another team that isn't us have dropped the ball.
They'll be fuming.
Yeah, if I was a Bury fan, I'd be livid because they should have been out of sight before the red card.
At times in that second half, because obviously we're only one behind, so you've still got that hope. Even if you're down to 10, and we haven't even gone on to that red card, but even if you're down to 10, there's still that hope. And when they're attacking, who's the fella down, Adams, little winger, sometimes he'd get the ball and he's got acres to kind of run into, and he just kind of, it was almost like he had too much time to make a decision, and he had a few chances, he popped it across. We got away with it, but good point, great point.
And also, big mention to friend of the pod, Greg Taylor, his 200th league appearance, and an absolute worldie to...
I texted him after the game saying, I hear you only score screamers, and he replied saying, who's this? No, he didn't. No, he recognised me.
That's funny.
He replied saying, please can you delete one?
Let me alone. The red card, very quickly?
It wasn't a red.
Travesty. Absolute travesty.
Well, yeah, we all hit the nail on the head before Joe Dunn's post-match, and then Joe Dunn said it in his post-match. If the ref's sending him off for lead him his elbow, it should be a straight red.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's yellow carding him there. I don't know what he's yellow carding him for. And now he can't appeal it.
It's a strange angle, isn't it, if you see where the two players are running from. Like, it's a clash, is what it looks like to me. I know he's kind of up with his arms, but I think that's how you jump, isn't it?
Yeah.
It seems very harsh to me.
Yeah.
And I feel for Paul Lewis because I thought he was one of our better players before that happened. I think he's been playing well the last few weeks. He seems to be a bit of a rough diamond. He's not the finished article yet, but I really like how he seems to want to attack. He plays quite attacking passes, or he looks to move the ball forward. And I hope, because he seems to, throughout his United career so far, flirt with the first team squad, but then doesn't get an extended run of games, or something happens, like he gets injured or whatever, and he's out of the squad again. I hope that he's back in the team, obviously not Tuesday night because he's suspended, but the Saturday afterwards. I put him straight back in.
Yeah, I think the best, Paul Lewis, and I think we've said it a couple of times, like the way that he seems to get into the right positions.
Yeah. Is, and he does it late as well, doesn't he? He's a bit like Luke Berry, and he's sort of
his goal against Grimsby. Yeah.
It's an exact example, like arriving in the 6-yard box just as the ball gets there. And the same thing against Berry as well. Mm-hmm. Like arriving just after it comes off the post. And if you're going to be that kind of third centre mid who's like pushing on a bit, that's exactly what you want. And like you say, Jordan, it is a bit like Berry. Luke Berry, that is.
Yes.
In the way that he can see to arrive late and sort of get a goal. And again, I do hope that he gets back in the team, just because. And this is another thing that I was going to say, perhaps it might be a bit late now that we've sort of talked about the whole game, but Joe Dunn said after Oldham that he was just going to change the whole team, like drop loads of players and that sort of thing. And like, if we're not doing well, like why not give people like Paul Lewis a go rather than stick with a try and tested, which just isn't going very well. Like Leon Davies as well. Like this is something that exactly. Like
is he too pally with the first team squad or the senior players, because he's been here a long time? Maybe he's not got the bottle to drop big names.
Oh, Joe.
Joe Dunn. Yeah. Mm. Like maybe he's too maybe well he's in with got, them, or maybe he just doesn't.
He might not have the bubble to drop big names.
So that's the end of the podcast forever. No, that's the end of part one, I think. It seems like a, you know, sensible place to stop. So then, coming up in part two, we're going to look ahead to Crewe, Tranmere and Yeovil, then on to part three with the any other business and a bit of football Jenga.
Just another message from the skipper again. 3 points in the bag. Now see you again next week for another 3 points. Get in there! Yeah!
Welcome back to Under the Abbey Stand. We've dissected the past few games, and now we're going to look ahead. Starting very soon, it's a trip to Crewe on Tuesday night. That'll be nice.
Well, I mean, depends how you mean by nice.
So it's going to be interesting to see how they line up, because we've got suspensions for Carroll and Lewis.
Carroll's being a yellow card in the 95th minute yesterday, the game before yellow cards get wiped. So
unlucky.
That's good. So he's got one game banned. Lewis is out for a game.
Yeah.
And Halliday's out.
We're assuming we're injured. Has it been confirmed how long he's out for?
No.
I've not heard.
I mean, I suppose the positive is that we've got a really good deep squad to pick from.
Yeah, really nice. Yeah, yeah. Especially at the back. Loads of really good options.
I think it picks itself, doesn't it? Like, Joel will just come in and probably Taylor will go to left back or something.
Yeah. I hope he goes Taylor left back and sticks Davis right back.
I
hope he doesn't throw Harrison Dunk on a left back, might do.
He could go Harry Darling as well.
What was the game?
To be a bit of a nutter.
What was the game earlier in the season? I think it might be Newport away where Harrison Dunk really got caught out at left back. And I love Harrison Dunk, but I hope he doesn't go with that.
Yeah.
Or maybe he goes 3-5-2.
Yeah. So this is what you're saying to me after the game. So I'd like you to advocate what your 3-5-2 would be on Tuesday night.
So the theory is, if you don't have complete confidence in your two centre backs, you play a third one and you play sort of wing backs so that you could drop down to a five if you're really feeling it. And I would play a back three of the three main central defenders that we have. So that's Lewis John, Greg Taylor, and George Taft. And then I think for wing backs, I think we've got some promising prospects there, like Halliday on the right hand side,
David Ford on the left.
Exactly. I mean, I was going to say
I actually think David Ford's a bit slow to play.
Maybe you can play them like left side of the back three.
No, go on, sorry. So this is for Tuesday, we're talking in general.
In general, because you've got Jake Carroll or Lewis Dunk who could.
Lewis Dunk.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
That is a good signing. That is a good signing.
Fair play. We've been criticising the transfer.
England international.
We've got so many defenders, you get them muddled up. But yeah, I think you've got players that could play in a wing-back position. I then think it would help the sort of central midfield free. It means that you don't have to play Maris in that sort of deeper position, which I don't like seeing him play in. You know, some people think he does it all right, but yeah, I think we've got options there, but I don't think he'll do it.
I personally think on Tuesday specifically, we take the lessons the positives that we got from Swindon, playing on the counter away from home. Well, I'm assuming on the counter, and we play a false nine. You have Amu. I don't think Abire looked absolutely like, broken when that final whistle went. Like, he literally couldn't move his legs. From maybe he was just happy.
He could hardly move his legs before the final whistle.
I mean, it's fine though, because we've got enough striking options that when we play Saturday, Tuesday, we're fine, right?
I just want to raise the point. 2 points, actually. Crew.
The crucial point.
The crucial point. Crew Alexandra.
You're fired today, Julian.
I've only scored the same amount of goals of Cambridge this year. So that's something. I think it's going to be a 0-0. I'm calling this early. They've lost three of the last five, winning the other two. But I do generally think...
But I still think we go Amu on the right, Brown, Lamb as a front three, or maybe Lamb in the middle, and then Maris, Deegan, O'Neill.
I think he'll bring O'Neill in rather than playing Osadebe.
I think the Swindon
first half was so impressive because that front three of Lamb, Brown and Amu are so quick that playing the high press against, well, any team in this division works pretty well, especially teams that don't have great defences, which I think you were hinting Crew aren't particularly good at the back.
No, I don't think Crew...
Tranmere the following weekend have got a great defence. Yeah. Might not work as well.
So, they've only conceded 8 goals all season. Oh, no, they haven't conceded 20.
That's good, isn't it? It's really good to get the analysis and the facts and the stats.
I just want to, like, put that in context for people who aren't here and can't see it. We have got the league table up in front of us. So that isn't just, like, a mistake of making notes or something. We are literally reading off a screen.
That's good, isn't it? It's good. It's good that they come to us for reliable information.
Also, just one point is that we're kind of, like... saying it's a lot better for Cambridge United, but if Cheltenham win their game in hand, Cambridge will just be one place above the relegation zone.
Yeah, all right.
That's a good start. That's to good, isn't it? Yeah.
So after Crew, we've got a nice weekend off because we tactically dropped out of the cup against Guiseley. So.
Well, not all cups, because we're going to win the Chequer Trade.
Well, yeah, that game's on Tuesday, the 4th of December.
At what point do we start going to those games?
Never. Not even Wembley? No, personally.
Jack, you're up for it.
I'll definitely go to Wembley. Yeah. I'm the most plastic Cambridge.
You're going
to
flag some sort of press pass for some Wembley box.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, everyone I see at the Cambridge games, I know what they're thinking.
We don't like cover the Chequer Trade trophy for like reasons that we've already talked about, but just one thing, like, Adi Aziz in that competition is absolutely unbelievable.
5 goals.
The second goal that he scored against Colchester, it's like world class finishing.
Yeah. Do you think it's to do with pressure?
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Having people on his back when he's playing in front of 4,000, not 4,000, 3,000. No, I mean a normal home game. Yeah, yeah. 3,000, and then he's playing in front of 300. There's less of a. He might be amazing in training. Do you know what I mean?
But then, I think generally, I think the players at the club rate him.
Like,
really? Yeah,
I don't.
Oh, no, I don't.
Have I made that clear before?
Yeah, I think you did mention it once, but I think he'll start on Tuesday against Crew, Alexandra FC. There's Cambridge are playing Northampton in that trophy on the 4th of December. And then, as you said, Julian, then we look ahead to a lovely trip to Tranmere.
Oh, that's going
to
be really, to the Wirral. Really, really, really cold.
Tough and cold and horrible.
And it could be quite a bleak day football-wise as well.
Yeah, Tranmere are doing well. Yeah. James Norwood scored about 40 goals this season already. Yeah. He's doing really well.
If they can keep him over January in that transfer window, I think they'll be pushing for sort of top seven.
They're doing
maybe outside sort of one of the lower sort of playoff spots. But
they're doing that great thing that they're taking the momentum of the promotion from the conference, like Lincoln did last year. Like we are no. Not really, but
Bristol Rovers.
I mean, there's loads and loads of examples. I think what's interesting is looking at the fixture list is Tranmere. I mean, that is a tough game, regardless of where you're sitting in the league.
Yeah.
Then you're looking at the next three: Yeovil, Morecambe, Crawley. That's where
you need to be getting your points, isn't it?
Because then even after that, it's Lincoln, and then I think it's MK on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And you're looking at fixture congestion, and we've made it very clear, we don't have the deepest of squads. Then we have to just go out and sign about a million players in January.
Yeah. So, it could be pretty bleak, but that, like you say, 15th of December at the Abbey against Yeovil Town, that is a huge game for Cambridge United this season, I think.
That's a six-pointer. Yeovil started the season quite well.
Yeovil have picked up like 12 points away from home. They're not a bad team.
They're doing quite well. Well, they're not. They're 18th.
But they've got two games in hand.
But they have dropped off a lot recently. From what I mean, in our preview, we had them as stonewallers to go down, didn't we?
Yeah.
And obviously, they're still in the battle, like you can tell.
Didn't they win 6-0 at Newport?
Yeah, yeah, early on in the season.
I think the wheels have come off at Newport. They lost yesterday to Cheltenham. Like you said, they lost to Yeovil recently quite heavily.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, no, that was a couple of months ago.
Wouldn't it be nice if we could say that the wheels are falling off Cambridge and we were sat fifth?
Yeah. I'm just hoping that the wheels do properly come off at Newport and they plummet down the bottom of League Two. I really don't like them. So.
Do not. The thing is with Cambridge is that we just never had wheels. No. We decided that we didn't need wheels.
We invented the wheel and then gave it away.
We actually decided that we only needed three wheels.
Going round in circles for quite a while. But yeah, Newport, as you say, are in fifth, but they've only got one win from five. But Exeter are doing even worse than that. Exeter are in sixth, and they've only got 3 points from the last five.
Oh, yeah.
We can't be Sayer slating that.
No. But I'm not slating, I'm just saying what I'm seeing, you know.
Anyway, this is besides the point.
But anyway, yeah, so Cambridge United, basically what we're saying is December's massive for their season.
Yeah, those middle three games are huge.
But we've got form of, like we were saying earlier in the show, of playing those kind of teams in and around us. And grinding out results, so I'm hoping that Lightning does strike twice and
have a lovely Christmas. One other kind of selection thing, actually, in the next few games. One thing that I was really quite surprised about before Berry was seeing the team sheet and seeing that Ford was on it. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that Mitov's just really, really bad? Or
well, people are still talking about that Exeter game where he made those mistakes. But like, we were talking about this yesterday. If you tally up the back catalogue of mistakes Ford's made just this season, I really think you've got to give Mitov a chance. And I mean, we've seen him play. We know he's all right, but he's a young player and you've got to nurture young players and give them game time, surely. Especially with that old, past it, fat bloke. I can't believe it.
I can believe it because I think if you put a gun to my head and say pick a goalkeeper that's better suited for this squad right now, I would still go with Ford just purely because there's not that much confidence in the defence. And I think if you've got doubts over your defence, playing a younger, inexperienced goalkeeper is a risk. I think Joe Dunn has dropped the ball massively by not blooding Mitov at the end of last season when we didn't have anything to play for. Also, if it turns out that playing Ford in those games is the reason that it triggered a contract extension, then he's messed up twice.
Yeah.
I personally would still play David Ford, but only because I think he's the better option of the two that we have. But I don't think we should have ever been in this situation. I don't think we should have renewed his contract.
Nope.
I imagine he earns a decent wage compared to the rest of them. I think that could have been better spent in the summer. I don't know. Would you put a new goalkeeper on your list of people you'd like to sign in January? Because I know everyone talks about having a striker, but I wonder if tightening up the defence would also be an option if you could.
This is an interesting question.
I think so, but I think in terms of kind of before January and getting there, I just kind of worry that it sends out the wrong message to persist with Ford now.
Yeah,
I just think.
Yeah.
What if you're not going to play Mitov now, you'll never play him. Because after the mistakes that Ford's made over the last couple of weeks, I don't see any argument for him being in the team, just because we're not doing well anyway. So just put Mitov in. And I'm at a stage now where I just think I would rather watch Mitov make mistakes than watch Ford make mistakes, just because at least Mitov might learn from them and might get better.
Exactly.
And Ford's just done, in my opinion. But Jordan, you raised quite a good point, and I imagine that's exactly why Joe Dunn's been playing him, to be fair. In terms of January, I think a goalkeeper would not be my top priority necessarily.
No.
Just purely because I worry that we might only be able to bring in one or two, and it is very much about a striker now.
Splash on striker.
On that subject, with January transfer window, flip it the other way around. Who would you get rid of to free up wages? So in my mind, I'd flog George Maris.
Would you?
His contract's up in the summer. I don't think he'll renew, so we're going to lose him on the free. I think with Lewis and other options we've got in midfield, O'Neill and Deegan and so forth, I think we could get away with not having him. I know that might sound a bit controversial because he scored some very nice goals, but I'd probably roll the dice and get him out the door to get a defender and a striker in.
If it meant we could guarantee bringing in a striker that's going to score 15 goals in the second half of the season or whatever... Yeah, I'd take that swap, considering I don't think his form has been particularly outstanding this season.
Are we completely sure there's not an issue with George Maris that we don't know about after that failed medical?
I think he just doesn't want to be here.
Well, no, but I mean...
It is quite difficult for him, to be fair.
A physical problem.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
You know, and then that might mean he's damaged goods, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you could get him cheap in January. Like,
I think we'd
accept
a
pretty low offer because we know that would be better than losing him for free in the summer.
I just wonder whether it is also a bit of a mental thing, because you've got to look at it from his perspective as well. Like, his wages would have gone up massively. He'd have been able to move back home. He'd have been playing at a high level.
Well, they're top of the championship, players, aren't they?
It is disappointing for him, to be fair, but
they were rumoured to be in for it. Stop laughing, Tom's making a point.
But in the same way, like, it is now November, like, you're a professional footballer, you've got to get over it. It's disappointing sometimes, it doesn't always, like, I'm sure if you ask, I don't know, Adi's ease, he'd have loved it if, like, Man City came in for him in summer. But it's not going to happen. And, you know, to be fair to Adi, he's managed to pick his head up and go again. He scored 5 goals in the Checker Trade Trophy this year, so
he's good.
Why isn't Maris doing the same?
Yeah.
Disgusting.
Yeah. Well, I think that brings us to quite a nice close of the second part. And then coming up in the third part, we're going to talk to you about the Fans Parliament and, of course, do some football Jenga. Welcome back to the third part of Under the Abbey Stand. In this part, we're going to have a brief look at the Cambridge United Fans Parliament. I mean, it sounds crazy. CFU and Cambridge United Football Club have kicked off a consultation, basically, with fans. So they're going to try and, you know, get communications going off the back of... not off the back of, but after that podcast that we did with Graham and Sean, they were very vocal about wanting to improve communications, and this is one of the steps being taken by the club. They want to know what fans think of the idea of it. They want to know how other clubs do it. They want to kind of take that from other clubs and then work it forward. It sounds a bit vague and a bit weird, but at least it's the club doing something proactively, I suppose. So, yeah, it's open to all fans. You don't need to be a CFU member or anything like that. So basically that's come out. Jordan, how do you see this?
Well, it's like you said, it's a consultation period at the moment, so it's hard to fully give, like, actual opinions because we don't know what's going to happen, you know. Is it going to be a case that it's going to be lots of meetings that anyone can attend, you don't have to be a member? Is it going to be that senior stakeholders at the club are going to be at those meetings? Essentially, like, is it just one up from a fans forum, which we should be having as part of our fans charter, but we've not had for many a moon? There's talk about people being elected onto it. So it's all sort of a bit up in the air at the moment, but I'd say it's a good first step around that point about sort of better communication with the club.
I hope they stop it from becoming cliquey.
One point, like, I ahead of the pod, knowing that we're going to talk about it, did a little bit of looking into what other fan parliaments are. So I looked up Wolves, and they've had a fan parliament since 2006. Basically, it is a opportunity for any fan to go to these meetings and put forward ideas to senior management within the club. And since 2006, some of their successes have been things like the removal of admin fees for online ticket sales, introductions of specific season tickets, like an under 21 season ticket. They do these flex ticket things as well. They've had lots of consultation and work on maybe trialing safe standing, admittedly, before they went into the Prem. So there are examples where it has been quite a positive thing for clubs. But some of the shortfallings that Wolves fans say of their fans parliament is a little bit like you just said, about it being a bit cliquey, not enough people engaging with it, and not enough sort of meaningful questions being asked. So I guess from our perspective for launching one, I think it's a good idea, but only if there is open access to everyone and that people do engage with it. Because, I don't know, if it just comes down to sort of a small group of people, then it's not really serving much of a purpose.
No.
Do we have a lot of details on its exact setup? Has that been made?
No,
I think the Cambridge one. Heard.
Yeah, our one.
No, that's what they're
that's
doing
what
at
this
the moment.
Process is, yeah.
And it's probably worth pointing out that there is a email address I think you can send ideas to. Nigel Pearce, who is deputy chair of CFU, is very open about taking opinions from people. You don't have to be a member of CFU to give an opinion. So it's very much at this sort of early stages of it being an idea. And the success is obviously what those ideas lead to and how it sort of is implemented.
I guess, yeah. Go on, Tom.
Yeah, I suppose speaking, because like you say, Jordan, it's still in the kind of consultation period, so it's quite difficult to have too many really specific opinions about it. So I suppose more generally, like, it's good that it's going to hopefully improve kind of representation. I think they were on about in the CFU article, they were on about setting up groups for, I don't know, whether it be young fans, female fans, various different other sort of groups of the fan base, really. So that's good. Hopefully that'll negate there being too much clickiness, I suppose the word would be. And obviously just the kind of concept of it, I suppose, is good that it gives fans a say. I think my key kind of problems with it are, like, I mean, I see it just being like what CFU are now. Yeah. I don't know. I don't really... And again, it is quite hard because it's still in the consultation period and we're not really sure what it is. That they don't even know what it's going to be called yet, to be honest. I think that's one thing they've said as well. In terms of, I suppose, the overall general idea of it, it does seem to some extent like the club have gone, well, we want to improve communication, so the fans can set something up. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you look at the four things that the club kind of announced in their little communications update thing, fan parliament, fans forums, fan engagement group, Cambridge Fans United monthly newsletter. I don't see much there that I guess they've opened up and they're hopefully going to listen a bit more. And one of the points in the CFU thing as well is it's going to allow the fans to influence decisions within the club. And this is something that needs to be really, like, clearly defined. Like, what do we have influence over? How much influence do we have? Could we, for example, I don't know, stop them from signing someone, make them sack the manager? You know, all these things. Could we make them reduce season ticket prices? Like, how much influence could a fans parliament have? Because I would argue that if it's going to be a case of like, taking away admin fees on tickets and introducing flexible tickets and stuff like that, that's exactly what CFU should have been doing anyway.
Yeah.
So that's not really what it should be there for.
They'll probably... So, yeah, you're right. There's the emphasis on those sort of four points is all around fans putting the effort in, but it will be... The idea is that senior stakeholders from the club will be at those points, those meetings, those forums, whatever. And I think you're kind of right. I think the club will probably pick up on good little ideas that maybe they haven't thought about. But when it comes to proper business ideas, management, also, players, whatever, obviously they're going to close rank and be like, nah, we're not going to engage fans in that.
I think I'm being a tiny bit critical in terms of the difference between this and CFU is surely that crucial point that CFU is, I think, like an elected group of people. So you have Nigel Pearce as deputy chair. I can't remember who's in charge of
Dave
it.
Dave Matthews-Jones. And has been.
So it's them that's speaking to the club as it is now. It's these people that are speaking to the club. Whereas maybe I haven't even looked into the fan engagement group, but if the club has set that up and they've called it a fan engagement group, the crucial point is that they're listening to all fans then. And the point about what can we actually affect, that's obviously something that they can't come out with a group and go, oh, fan engagement group, you can tell us who to sign and what we should do with the manager. Because also, but then again, having said that, it would be interesting to see how it develops if we use it properly and we mobilise as a fan base and say there's a unanimous, I think you could take the end of Sean Derry's reign, if this was there, and I don't know what it's actually going to look like, there's an argument for saying that if there was one of these meetings at the end of, I don't know when it was really bad, like end of November, so like, sort of time. Just before we kind of picked up over Christmas, before we got sacked, end of November, it could have been a unanimous decision. And they might have listened to that. Yeah. But you don't know, they can't set it up on the premise that they're going to listen to every single thing about these huge business things. You might have to do a bit of a separation.
Again, and I do think you're right there, and that is a fair point. Like, if you're going to allow this to, like, essentially run the club, which I think that CFU have made very clear is not going to be the case, then what's the point in having a board? What's the point of having a chairman and stuff that? Like, but I think it was just like a more general point that this needs to be really clearly defined, and it needs to be really clear about what sort of influence we have and how much we have,
and
necessarily
it needs to be used properly by us now. If they put all the framework in, we can't then be critical of not hearing communication back because no one's using it. I think that's the point. There's also, like, tiny little thing, like the first thing I'd bring up is, why can't I buy a beer in the NRE? That's my first thing. That's the sort of thing that this could genuinely change.
It is. It's that level.
It's a very, very, very small thing in the grand scheme of things. But it means, you know, the game will pass by more quickly.
This screams, and I'm a bit pessimistic about this, and I'm not going to go on, but this screams of a kind of government setup. When, you know, when a government feeds people something to keep them going, and then, yeah, the coalition was supposedly 50-50, I feel like the fans are being mollycoddled here, and it's just a bit like...
And yeah, and that then picks up the point that Julian makes. The fans have to drive this to work.
Yeah.
If you mobilise and you get certain opinions, whether it be big or large, and really sort of make noise with that, then that the club can't ignore that is coming from the fans.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think one of the really sort of interesting points about this is that it will be open to all. You don't have to be a member. You don't have to pay a subscription. And maybe that's where CFU in the last sort of 5-10 years has failed, is that it's a fans group, but it's not openly available to every fan unless they sign up and pay subscriptions and so forth. If they set it up in a way which is more easy accessible for everyone and also focuses on every group of within our fan base.
And has a bit more, I think the crucial point is like direct contact as well with the club.
Yeah.
I think at this stage it's hard to really say, because as you say, Tom, it has to be properly defined before we can have a proper opinion. I'm probably a bit more positive about it, because even if it is just what you say, at least it's something, isn't it? At least they've appreciated that there was a problem, and it's a start. Let's see what happens. Let's see how it's defined. Let's see then, once that it's actually set up, how it's possible to be used, and exactly like you say, what we can change. They're all questions to be answered. But for me, right now, I look at it as quite a positive move.
Yeah.
That with development could be very good, but it could turn into nothingness, and then it's another way to criticise them.
Yeah,
I think a really positive thing as well, just kind of aside from the fans' parliament, is that fans' forum coming back.
Yeah,
I think for a club of our size, it's so important to be able to have the chance to sit, I don't know, a director, the manager, and someone else, like, just in a room fielding questions from fans. Exactly like we had with Graham Daniels and Sean Grady.
Yeah.
Like, I think coming off the back of that, as this podcast will be, like, that was quite well received by quite a lot of people, and I think those two came out of it quite well, just because they took the questions that we had. Some of them weren't particularly pleasant to answer for them, I don't think.
No.
They just answered them. I think they were quite open and honest. And if we're not asking them to go out and... I mean, they have done, and it's obviously good that they're kind of making these steps. Like, we're not asking them to go out and set all these things up. We're just asking them to be a bit more open, a bit more honest. And that seems to be what they're hopefully trying to do. And then, I suppose, on the slightly more negative side, you could maybe argue that the last thing that the club needs at the moment is more politics involved in it. But
just to pick up on Tom's first point, I mean, it's great that the club are now engaging with things like this, and they did the podcast and stuff like that. And I don't want to be overly critical on CFU, because I think they deserve a lot of praise for their commitment and the work that they do, a lot of work that is behind the scenes and not seen. But I really feel like that we shouldn't have been in a position where this needs to be a thing. I don't think fans' parliament should have needed to be a thing. I don't think campaigning to have fans' forums back should have been a thing, because a more in-touch CFU would have picked up on this a long time ago. Been like, why haven't we had a fans' forum for a couple of years? A supporters group that has a person on the board, why are we not asking that question every board meeting? When's the next fans forum? Why haven't you communicated about this? Why aren't you answering these questions?
Why do we let the communication get so bad?
And I think, like I said, I've got a lot of love and a lot of time for CFU, but I think one of their main failings in the last sort of 5-10 years is CFU started as kind of like an activist group. It had a bit of a sort of a protest kind of point to it. It was launched at the time when the club was, you know, selling its ground and selling its players to make sure that it covered sort of money. You know, it came at a really sort of crucial time for us. And then sort of, you know, the last 5-10 years where things, we kind of plateaued and got used to life in the conference, and then things were really good for a couple of years, it kind of lost its activist kind of edge. And I think that's why not many people engage with it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's very appealing to younger fans. I think it does a lot of good, but unless you're a part of it, you're not seeing what that good is. And I think, you know, and CFU have been very vocal about saying that a fans' parliament could change the way that CFU runs and is an entity in the future. But I hope, my hope is that these kind of incentives and and the fans of Parliament brings back that kind of importance to the club to listen to what we're saying, even if it's down to something as trivial as I want a beer at half time.
Yeah. Stick UTAS on the board, that's what I would say.
Well, yeah.
Just kind of going back to CFU as well, and it's something that we've not really talked about, and like you say, Jordan, they do a lot of good work, and they have done as well. I think having the chairman of the football club on their board for quite a significant amount of time, that seemed like quite an obvious kind of conflict of interest, and that's something that I've not really seen properly explained to anyone, and that's maybe why a lot of people would suggest that they're about as much use as a chocolate teapot. But no, that they have done a lot of good work, and I think we should probably not be too critical, just because again, like, it hasn't been defined what it's going to be for, what it's going to do. And once that comes out, then perhaps we can start to be a bit more positive. But in the initial phase, like, it's good that they're at least trying, which they haven't done for some years.
Right, well, good stuff. Well analysed, gents. and I think the only person dreading the next part of the show more than Jordan Warland is myself, but Julian.
I just really, really quickly wanted to announce that issue 2 of the UTAS fanzine comes out. You'll be able to buy it. There'll be a pre-order link that goes live on Tuesday, and you can pre-order it, which it will get sent out to you by Wednesday, the 12th of December, or you can buy it at your Yeovil home. It's got some great stuff in it. There's an interview with Tom Champion. Jordan's written about the diamond, compared this Cambridge United diamond to Barca's diamond.
Yeah, Barca of 92.
It's great. It's really, really interesting.
We've got a really, really good front cover this time as well.
Yeah, fantastic front cover.
Really good.
Not that the last one wasn't, but this one's especially good. So look out for that on Tuesday.
Buy it for the front cover.
Just buy it for the front cover.
Don't read what's in it. Just to clarify, that's not what I was dreading. I wasn't dreading that little spiel about that. The fanzine I like. I'm dreading football Jenga. And here we are. And I'm dreading it for a number of reasons. I find it really hard to think of the games. It just feels like a lot of pressure. So as we said before, I'm at SwindleHurstJ on Twitter, and please DM me on Twitter with any of your suggestions for football Jenga. I had one from Connor, and that was used in one of the previous episodes. I'm really hoping we haven't done this one. I'm having a horrible thing dawning over me that we might have done it. But anyway, right.
Cambridge Gateshead.
So, no, it's not.
Do you know what, right? There's a lot of football games to choose from.
That's
if
it.
If you manage to go with two, the same. Like, we must have done this, what, like 12 times or something?
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot that we did that went wrong straight away.
We've probably did about 20.
Well, don't say that. No one knew about that.
Right, well, what I've gone for is from the 2014 World Cup, Brazil 1, Germany 7. We haven't done that. It's great. I know we haven't done that. So, it's difficult, this one. I've got a second one, you know. Just don't worry. Okay. I'm worried. But I think, you know, good luck. So, in football Jenga, it goes round in a circle, starting with the guest. You name any of the players who played in the match, either started the match or came on at any time. If you get one wrong, you're out, and the last person standing wins.
Julian, you can borrow my paper, because I literally know one person, so I'm out after
one the first person. Lesson. There's loads of goal scorers to choose from.
Yeah, but all I can think of is the Brazil and Germany squads from the Summer World Cup.
Great.
You're going first anyway, so...
Yeah.
Go on.
David Luiz played.
Well done.
Thomas Müller.
Yeah.
André Schürrle.
Yeah.
Was Neuer in goal for Germany?
Yeah.
Made it to round two.
That's good.
See you later.
Mesut Ozil.
Yep.
Fred.
Yep.
Is there a Germany player on the day, Gomez?
No, he didn't play.
Well, that's good.
you did well, Jordan. I'm sorry.
Oscar.
Yep.
Closer.
Yep.
Cruz.
Yep.
Cruzgate.
Yeah, I was just
Thiago Silva.
Tom Walker.
Oh, that's not ideal.
About to be dethroned potentially.
I'm going for an outrageous one. Luis Gustavo.
He's done it. That's a good one to do it on. I know that was a hard game. The players you missed were Julio Cesar, Maicon, Dante, Marcelo, Fernandinho.
Did Willian play?
Hulk, Bernard, and then, yeah, Willian, Paulinho and Ramirez came on. And then Germany missed Howardes, Hummels, Boateng, Lahm, Schweinsteiger, Khedira, Mertesacker and Draxler.
The Demons players, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
There's a brilliant story from, I think it was one of the guys who presented it on BBC. They went out for a meal after that game in Brazil.
The Germans?
No, the BBC presenters.
Sorry, right,
like,
yeah.
The BBC like crew who like were presenting the game.
Yeah. I got what you meant.
Apparently they went out in, I think it was like Rio or something, for a meal after the game. And obviously like, Brazil was like broken.
Yeah.
Like it was really humiliated. And they went out for a meal. And there were seven of them. And because obviously they speak Portuguese in Brazil, don't they? None of them spoke a word of Portuguese, so they basically went into a restaurant and held up seven fingers.
Oh,
like that.
Oh my god!
That was a good story. I didn't know where that was going. Well, that brings us to a very nice close of this edition of Under the Abbey Stand. We'll be back with you in December, and it's going to be exciting.
Oh, we're doing a Christmas special
as
well.
Yeah,
we've got a good Christmas special coming up.
More on that.
Coming up.
Keep an eye on the social media.
Yeah.
And keep an eye out for that fanzine. As Julian said, we'll be at Yeovil.
Yep.
Flogging him. Thanks to Julian Roberts.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. I can't wait to do it again.
Thanks to Tom Walker.
Thank you very much.
And Jordan Warden, special guest again. Thank you.
Yeah, he's not special.
Vote Jordan for the Fans Parliament. Thank you.
Vote UTAS for the Fans Parliament.
No, we've already discussed this. We're going to be a extremist.
Right-wing extremist.
Don't say right-wing.
Yeah, don't say right-wing, mate.
No, like Giovanni Brown.
Right-wing, right, yeah.
Right-wingers, right, yeah, exactly.
No tracking back.
Yeah, so that's the perfect end to the podcast. See you next time.